Chapter 1. Travis Devine took a shallow breath, ignored the heat and humidity that was rising fast along with the sun, and rushed to board the 620 train like it was the last flight out of Saigon. He was wearing an off-the-rack pearl-gray suit, a wrinkled white shirt that needed laundering, and a muted dark tie. He would rather be in jeans and a t-shirt, or camis and army jump boots, but that couldn't happen. Not on this ride. He was freshly showered, although already starting to perspire. His thick hodgepodge of hair was as neatly combed as he could manage it. His face was shaved and mildly scented with a nondescript cologne. He wore cheap tasseled loafers shined fore and aft. The imitation leather briefcase held his company-issued laptop with special encryption and no personal use permitted thereon, along with breath mints and a packet of Pepcid AC. He no longer took the neat little power pills he'd popped when suited up to fight for his country. The army used to give them out like gummy bears so the grunts would battle longer and harder on less sleep and less to eat. Now they cost money. His primary weapons, instead of the army-issued M4 carbine and M9 sidearm of yesteryear, were twin Apple Mac 27-inch screens connected by digital tethers to mighty encrypted clouds, seeded with all the data he would ever need. It was all bullshit, really, and strangely enough, more important to him than anything else on Earth right now. What they taught you in the world of high finance was simple, really. Win or lose. Eat or starve. It was a binary choice. No Taliban or Afghan soldier pretending to be your ally before banging around into the back of your head. Here, his chief concerns were quarterly earnings projections, liquidity, free and closed markets, monopolies and oligarchies, in-house lawyers who wanted you to stick to the rules, and bosses who insisted that you didn't. And most significant of all, the person sitting right next to Devine at the office. They were mortal foes. It was him or them in Wall Street's version of mixed martial arts. Devine was commuting south to the big city on Metro North's Harlem line. At age 32, his entire life had changed, and he wasn't sure how he felt about it. No, he was sure. He hated it. That meant things were working according to plan. He sat where he always did when commuting into the city, third row window seat on the starboard side. He switched to the port side on the way back. The train puttered along with no real ambition, unlike the humans it carried. Sleek trains ran like cheetahs in Europe and Asia, but here they were snails. Yet they were faster than the cars stuck in the murderous traffic that piled in and out of the city morning, noon, and night. Generations before him had ridden this very same route to make their living in the sweatshop spires of Manhattan. Many had died along the way from the usual suspects, widowmaker heart attacks, strokes, aneurysms, the slow death of neurological disorders and cancers, a liver painfully scuttled by too much alcohol, or self-inflicted deaths among those who could take the strain no longer. Devine lived in Mount Kisco, in a saggy townhouse shared with 320-somethings trying to forge their futures in various ways. He had left them all asleep as he tried to shape his future day by day. The train would continue to fill as it wended its way along to Manhattan. It was summer, the sun was well on its way up, and the heat was building. He could have lived in the city and paid a lot more money for the easier commute, but he liked trees and open spaces, and being surrounded by skyscrapers and concrete at all times was not his preference. He had actually been mulling over where to live when a realtor who knew a friend of his had called out of the blue and told him she had found him a room at the townhouse. It was cheap enough that he was able to save a bit, and lots of people commuted into the city, even though it made for long days and nights. But that philosophy had been beaten into his psyche for most of his life.
"You work till you drop, Travis," his father had told him over and over. "Nobody in this world gives you a damn thing. You have to take it, and you take it by working harder than anybody else. Look at your sister and brother. You think they had it easy?"
Yes, his older brother and sister, Danny and Claire, board-certified neurosurgeon at the Mayo Clinic and CFO of a Fortune 100, respectively. They were 8 and 9 years older than he was, and already minted superstars. They had reached heights he never would. He had been told this so often.